Well, in a worrying omen, they tell me short-term US interest rates have fallen below long-term interest rates. And it's the first time this has happened since before the global financial crisis. It's seen as one of the more reliable early warnings of future US recession. The movements in bond markets certainly had share traders worried, with the main US indices falling close to 2%. Meanwhile, economists focused on Australia continue to sound their own warnings about a potential housing market collapse, triggering a possible homegrown recession. Michael Yander is our regular Monday finance commentator. Michael, hello there.
Morning, Fran.
Let's go to the US markets first, Michael. Just how big a deal is this dramatic shift down in long-term US interest rates?
It's very significant, Fran, enough to send the S&P 500 share index down 1.9% on Friday. The last time US 10-year bond yields were below low 3-month bond interest rates began in late 2006 and preceded the financial crisis that started in 2007 and, of course, exploded in September 2008. The so-called inverted bond yield is seen as one of the more reliable early warning signs of a US recession, basically because it signals the economy is expected to get worse in the future than it is now and interest rates will be falling. That's one reason why those long-term bond rates have fallen so low is that the Fed has already signalled a dramatic change in direction, with no interest rate rises expected this year and perhaps only one next year. Now, usually what happens in most cycles is that basically the central bank arrives late at the party to kind of cut it out. By then, people are already leaving the party and the Fed rate rises just sink the economy. It does seem that the Fed's a little more on top of it this time by flagging that it's not going to raise interest rates again. So it is possible these lower long-term interest rates and what markets see now as an 80% chance of a rate cut by the Fed before the end of this year may actually help head off the downturn.
Back to rate cuts. Back in Australia, analysts continue to sound warnings about the housing market here. Amongst them, long-term doomsayer, I think we can call Steve Keen that, can't we? He's still forecasting a big drop in house prices.
Yes, Fran. Dr. Keen has been forecasting a large drop in the housing market since before the global financial crisis. And despite a walk from Canberra up to the top of Mount Kosciuszko back then, related to a bet with economist Rory Robertson.
Was that naked?
No, it wasn't. It was wearing a T-shirt saying I was hopelessly wrong on house prices. Ask me how or why. But despite that, Dr. Keane's still forecasting a 40% decline in real home prices from peak to trough, adjusted for inflation. He says that peak now is in 2017, but the fall in home prices may take some time because the federal government will do whatever it can to arrest the slide.
Australia's done everything to continue pumping the bubble up, and I thought it would finally run out of steam after 2010 when it fell a bit at that stage. But fundamentally, the Reserve Bank jumped on the same bandwagon. They thought the China boom would go on forever. They realised it wasn't going on forever. Terrible, terrible mistake there. And so let's drop prices and bring investors into the market and basically had open slather lending. And that drove Australian household debt levels beyond anything I thought it would ever reach, to now be the second highest in the globe and the highest of any country normally running a trade deficit.
So definitively, do you think 2017 was the peak?
Yes, I do. That is the peak. I'm willing to bet on that one. And the peak, this is the same sort of thing that happened in America. The house prices actually peaked in America in 2006, well before the crash actually hit. The downturn in house prices happens first, then the downturn in the real economy comes afterwards, and we're going through that now.
Now, a lot of analysts in the banking sector have pointed to the credit restrictions that have come in from the banking regulator APRA and also under the gaze of the Royal Commission as being the fundamental trigger of the house price decline. If that's the trigger, would loosening those restrictions reverse the decline?
It wasn't the trigger. It was a heavy hand on the trigger because the trigger had already been pulled. The house prices had peaked before the Royal Commission began. They're already heading down. And once you get this, if you've got what mathematicians call a positive feedback loop, then it means it's good. I mean, one thing amplifies the other. So rising house prices lead you to taking on more mortgage debt, which causes rising house prices and so on. That's what's happening with the house prices. So that already reached a peak. You simply couldn't push household debt beyond about 120% of GDP. You're into world record territory. What are we going to do? Beat Mars. Just the fact that the debt stabilizes means the rate of change of debt goes to zero and the acceleration goes negative. And that's what actually happened before the Royal Commission came along. Then the Royal Commission exposed why the debt levels got to be so high. There's an NAB document, which I think is criminal. that shows the household expenditure model, saying what households are allowed to borrow. They, on that document, they claim that a couple earning $400,000 a year, which means $25,000 per month net of taxes, is spending $3,700, and the rest can be used to finance a mortgage. They claim that each additional child costs you $7 per day to clothe, feed, educate, et cetera, in Sydney. That is 1/20th of the cost of a child at best. And on that basis, people would ring up, what can I afford to borrow? Here's what you go, oh, really? Well, that seems a bit high, but don't worry, house prices will always rise. It was basically bank fraud pushed the debt levels to the highest pretty much in the history of the planet for countries running a trade deficit.
Now, so far, the decline in house prices, while fairly steep and certainly on historical levels much steeper than most of the declines in Sydney and Melbourne, hasn't been a sharp crash. Do you think it will become a sharper crash, or is this just a long-term slow drag?
It's more likely a long-term slow drain because the government will do everything it can to pump up the market again. You've got more landlords per head in Parliament House than virtually anywhere else in the country. They're going to be trying to keep their house prices rising. The first-time owners schemes, which I call first-time vendors schemes, will come back in again, all that sort of jazz. So that's going to attenuate how sharp the downturn is. But fundamentally, people are now looking at falling house prices, and that's an encouragement to wait and not take on a debt, to take on less debt, and if you are in debt, to pay it down. And that means the credit-fueled expansion is over. And if you look at the most extreme example, that's the second place getter in amongst trade deficit countries, which is Ireland. And that went from something like about 60% of GDP to about 120% in terms of household debt to GDP ratios, right back down again. It looks like the Pyramid of Giza, up and down. We've been a much, much slower rise, but we're going to have the same overall decline, I think. When household debt gets back to about 80% of GDP, which is still extremely high, then you might see a turnaround. So I expect about 3 years or so of falling prices. And of course, in the meantime, the government doing everything it can to try to stop them falling.
And the Reserve Bank?
Reserve Bank's got about 1.5% of interest rates cuts to go. I think it's heading down towards zero. I've always been a bear on their direction of interest rates. They haven't got a clue of how house prices set. They are simply ignoring reality because they live in a fantasy world called neoclassical economics.
Late last year, the Reserve Bank Deputy Governor talked about the potential, albeit in his view unlikely, of quantitative easing in Australia.
Absolutely certain. The Reserve Bank, I have very little respect for the Reserve Bank of Australia. They know that, I'm happy to say it on air. I have much more respect for the Bank of England, the Bundesbank and so on. They understand credit. They've learned from the financial crisis. The Reserve Bank is still back in the dark ages, even of neoclassical economics. So they haven't understood credit. They'll copy QE. Now, QE, what has dramatically increased inequality globally. It's a large part of what's behind the yellow vest protests in France. It's what's caused Trump's election, fundamentally massive inequality. But QE is designed to give the financial sector money with which they buy shares. So anybody who owns shares makes more money. Those who don't own shares wave goodbyes. The high income earners get even higher wealth. They should be doing quantitative easing for the people, using their money creation capability to give people an injection of money into their bank accounts. If you're in debt, you pay your debt down. If you're not in debt, you get a cash injection. That could be used to democratize share ownership as well. New shares created to cancel corporate debt. They won't do anything like that. They'll just go pig-headed, copy QE from overseas and give us the same increase in inequality after the crisis that's occurred in America as well.
Although arguably QE did assist somewhat in pulling the US out of what was a great recession.
I've done a little bit. If you remember, QE in America was $1 trillion per year of bonds being bought off the financial sector by the central bank, which means they put $1 trillion worth of cash, which is between 5 and 8% of the GDP, into the financial sector. Now, of course, the financial sector simply buys shares. So $1 trillion per year more demand for shares. That's what turned the S&P around from 666 up to about 2,000, driving up share prices, because every year there was $1 trillion of additional cash being created by the Federal Reserve and spent by the financial sector. Now, some of that money gets people sell shares to the financial institutions. They go and buy themselves their Lamborghinis and their Teslas, get extra coffees, hire somebody to clean the house. About maybe 10% of that dribbled into the real economy. So $1 trillion into the financial sector, maybe $100 billion per year into the real economy. And as my friend Michael Hudson puts it, the helicopter landed on Wall Street, not Main Street, but Main Street got the crumbs.
If Australia is going to continue to suffer house price declines and the economic fallout that you predict from this, is there any way that governments, central banks and other authorities can mitigate the worst effects so that Australia doesn't end up in the economic position of an island, Spain, or even a US?
They could do a quantitative easing for the people and then basically cancel that huge load of private debt. And that with a cancellation of private debt, and you know, if you drop the household debt levels and corporate debt levels from where they are, well, you might go from 200% of GDP, let's say you got it to 100%, that would mean people would spend the existing money more quickly because people spend less when they're in large amounts of debt. You get more turnover out of that. Government spending, infrastructure projects, which we need. I've got a great idea. Let's build a decent internet backbone for this country. So government spending could do it as well, and a drop in the trade and the value of the dollar could also mean we don't have the same trade deficit problems.
And just finally, Steve, keen to put it on the record, if 2017 was the peak, what's your current forecast for the peak to trough decline in national home prices and over what time period?
Still about 40% and over about 3 to 5 years. I can see it bottoming by about 2021, 2022.
Dr. Steve Keen there, and we'll find out more about the Reserve Bank's thinking on home prices when the bank's assistant governor, Lucy Ellis, speaks at a Housing Industry Association breakfast tomorrow morning, Fran.
Okay, and one of the key issues the Reserve Bank's currently focused on is boosting wages so households can continue paying existing debts and maintaining current spending. It's something that's also been a focus of the Ardern government in New Zealand.
That's right. New Zealand already has a much more deregulated labour market than Australia and has had for some time. It was basically like work choices heavy, although some aspects have since been unwound since the 90s. Individual contracts, though, in New Zealand are still very common, and the Ardern Labour government is trying to unwind some of those provisions. Importantly for Australia, New Zealand is now considering some form of industry-wide or pattern bargaining in some sectors, which is something the ACTU is pushing for here. The Centre for Future Work, a workplace think tank that's part of the Australia Institute, has studied the key changes being put forward by the Ardern government and potential lessons for Australia. Alison Pennington is from the Centre for Future Work and she's the report's author. She says there are lessons for Australia's current debate about wage growth.
In the absence of a collective mechanism to raise wages, lots of workers just went wholesale back to the minimum conditions. And so that's why, in particular, minimum wage increases are so important for New Zealand.
And that is a trend that we've been seeing in Australia increasingly with the reduction in enterprise bargaining, where more people are falling back onto award conditions rather than negotiated enterprise conditions.
Exactly, yeah. And so New Zealand is an example of what happens when we completely dismantle the structure. Australia still has the remnants of our award system, so the modern award system. It shows us long-term stagnating low wages has a terrible impact on productivity, and that's where New Zealand is at now.
That's Alison Pennington, whose report's being released tomorrow. And this week, The Business will have a special series looking at wage growth in Australia with part one from yours truly airing tonight at 9:45 on ABC News Channel.
Great. And just briefly, markets here, given the fall on Wall Street, how's it likely to play out?
The SPY 200 futures down 0.8%, so a big fall likely in Australia, and the Aussie dollar down as well at 70.75 US cents.
Michael, thank you very much. Michael Yander, the ABC's Senior Digital Business Reporter.